Bear Down Bears fans, another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast coming your way. Pat the Designer, Jason McKee in the building. We got a lot to break down, a lot of Bears news swirling around. We got Bears and Jaguars in London. We got the Bears yet again avoiding Hard Knocks. Never doubt the power of a McCaskey. I doubted for a little bit of a second, J-Mac. Yesterday, don't I was like, we might get Hard Knocks.
I knew we were going to do it, man. Because look, it's hard enough for the media to watch practice.
Bro,
you can't even watch mini camp and OTAs. Like, you know,
hey, I told you this year.
With all them cameras, come on, man.
Bro, I told you this year, bring your helmet and just sneak on there, come in the practice squad jersey, find your way on the field, man, so we can get an up close look at these mugs, man.
They treated me last year, man. Like I've never been in that facility. Don't step on the gravel. I'm like, I'm only played on the field for 10 years. Like, it was unbelievable, man.
It was T-Man. Back it up there, J-Mac. Back it up now. What you doing on this field?
Big guy behind the rope now. Come on, guy.
Hey, but to break down some of the schedule release that we're getting, right? We got the Bears and Jaguars in London news. We got the perfect person in the world, a former Jaguar himself. And let me tell you something, somebody who makes me feel bad about not hitting the gym every single day when I log into Instagram, because my God, me and Clay got a little bit of a history. I've had him on the show before, and gotta welcome in Clay Harbor to the show. Clay, you don't even know this, right? But when we had you on the Breeze, maybe about a year ago, my wife had no idea, like, history of football. So I'm like, yeah, I got a former NFL tight end. She's like, oh, this is great. And as, like, I was playing the video for her, she was like, I remember him. He was on The Bachelorette. He almost won them. I was like, oh, my God. Lay it up. Clay, what's going on, man? How you feeling?
Not a lot. I know we had to bring up The Bachelorette thing, man. It's just something you can't get past it, but I enjoy it, poke fun at it. You know, a bunch of my old teammates still give me a hard time for it. But, hey, it was a fun time. And like you said, some of the women audience will recognize me from there.
You know what I mean?
It's all fun, yeah.
Hey, listen, I'm going to be honest with you. It wasn't me poking fun at you. I was just sitting there. I was like, this man is more known than anybody I know out here. He's got a whole audience that I don't know if there's another NFL player with. We got a lot to get into, though. Clay, first and foremost, how you been, my guy? It's been a minute since me and you actually got a chance to sit down and chop it up.
I'm great, man. As you could tell, I don't know if you guys could hear the sirens in the background. Yeah. I'm in downtown Chicago, too. So, you know, it's good. The summer's coming. Weather's nice. It looks like a great weekend. 70 degrees and sunny.
One
of these Cubs day games. So I'm excited, man. Chicago summer's almost here.
You're still living that bachelor life, man. I like it. Are you still living that bachelor life?
Yeah, man, still living the bachelor life. My mom reminds me of it every day. She's trying to get some kids. I'm like, hey, mom, you know, it'll happen eventually. But right now I'm just enjoying life, traveling, doing all that stuff.
Man, nothing wrong with that. Absolutely nothing wrong with that, my guy. Well, let's start it off, man. First and foremost, we got Bears, Jaguars in London. One of the schedule leaks has been released now, right? I'm always leery with these schedule leaks, but the London trip seems like a tough one to kind of mess up here. And the fact that we have a former Bear and a former Jaguar on the panel, I just want to get your thoughts on some things from this game. And I'm going to start it off with you, Clay. When you look at the Jaguars right now, yeah, I want to go to that team first, because to me, Trevor Lawrence is the least talked about first round pick I've ever seen in my life. It almost feels like Justin Fields was the first round pick from that draft. I swear they talk more about Jamar Chase's mistake in the Super Bowl than they do about Trevor Lawrence. What is it about Trevor that people are so patient with? What is the expectation around him that people are still waiting to blossom that hasn't happened yet?
So with Trevor, you know, the first year he had a very down year, but a lot of people kind of attribute that to Urban Meyer and the fact that he had absolutely no weapons. He was in the same boat as Justin Fields' first year. Mm-hmm. No weapons, you know, tough coaching staff. Just there was a lot of, you know, issues with that offense and the way that Urban was running. That second year, you saw he bounced back. He won a playoff game. They won the last five games of the year. He ended up beating Justin Herbert in the Chargers.
Yeah.
And, you know, makes the playoffs, wins the playoff games, plays the Chiefs tough in the divisional round, barely loses that game. So now everybody's up here with Trevor during the second half of the season, one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I think third best quarterback in QBR and QB rating. But then this year, he took a little bit of a step back. Some injuries on the team. People were expecting a lot with Calvin Ridley coming over. He got hurt. The offensive line wasn't holding up. And he had a little bit of a down year. He did show those flashes, a lot of drops. But people still think that Trevor, you know, wasn't the issue. And I do, too. I think Trevor Lawrence is still a guy that's going to be a very good quarterback. But he obviously took a step back. And I think they did some good things to fill out that roster. They had some center trouble as well with Luke Fortner, the rookie. They bring in Mitch Morris, who was the starting center for the Bills for a couple years. So they've done some things to help out that offensive line, and now they're expecting Trevor to get back on track. And instead of Press Taylor, their offensive coordinator, calling the plays like he has been the last year, Doug Peterson is going to take over the play calls again. It's what people think, at least, like he did 2 years ago when Trevor had that really good season. And you love that for the Jaguars because Doug was a former quarterback, played 10-plus years in the league at QB, former offensive coordinator for the Eagles, former play caller, former offensive coordinator, head coach. He knows this offense. He's really good at it, and I think he's going to take it over again this year, which I think will help Trevor.
Yeah, Clay, I want to talk about the matchups in this game. You look at, and let's stay on the offensive side of the ball for the Jaguars. You talk about Trevor Lawrence. Let's talk about the Bears' defense and how they match up against this Jaguars' offense. You know, you talked about Trevor falling off somewhat last year, but with the pieces coming back on this Bears' defense and guys getting another year under their belt in the system, the guys in which they added, a Tremaine Edmonds, a T.J. Edwards, you know, Jalen Johnson getting that big extension. You know, what matchups do you like in this game in terms of the Jaguars' offense and the Bears' defense?
I think the Bears match up well. I think the Jaguars do have some good tackles. They have rookie Anton Harrison, who had a really good year for the Jaguars. Cam Robinson was suspended for a bit of the year. And they have Walker Little. The Jaguars have three starting caliber tackles. So I think they'll have some decent matchups. But obviously Montez Sweat, you know, you can't really put him one-on-one in these pass rush situations, regardless of who you have. But they do have good tackles that they probably think will be able to block Montez Sweat in these situations. But what the matchup I really like for the Bears is their defensive backs versus the Jaguars receivers, right? Christian Kirk is still a player. He can play one of the most underrated receivers in the league, more of a slot guy, can play outside. Then you got Brian Thomas Jr. Some think he should have been drafted earlier. He's a guy that, I mean, we don't really know, but 17 touchdowns at LSU, tall guy, 6'3", ran the second fastest 40 for the receivers at 4.33 seconds. Guy can fly, but I still think this is a young guy the Bears can corral. And then obviously you got Gabe Davis, who they brought over after losing Calvin Ridley. Gabe Davis is that veteran receiver that's crafty, that'll be able to get open inside or out, but that's all they got. So that's not one of the best receiver cores you're going to see. So I think the Bears really need to focus on stopping Travis Etienne Jr., who's one of the most underrated running backs in the league.
Yeah.
And I think if you can do that with obviously Tremaine Edmonds, T.J. Edwards, you got strong linebackers. You got big Andrew Billings in there. You know, you got some solid defensive linemen. So you stop Etienne. I don't think this is a very explosive receiver group. Obviously, we got to see what the rookie Brian Thomas Jr. can do. You know, he could surprise some people, and he was a first-round pick for a reason. But I really like the matchup for the Bears' defense. They could probably hold the Jaguars to, you know, 21 points, something around there, you know, the way they were playing at the end of the year. And the Bears' offense, obviously we got to see where Caleb goes, but I think their team is going to score some points this year.
Yeah, when you look at this Bears offense, I mean, what are your thoughts on how Ryan Poles has put this whole thing together? You see weapons at every level. You see a young quarterback who's already getting in there working with guys. Can't tell a lot from T-shirts and shorts, but, you know, the fact that they're already building that chemistry, everybody losing their mind at that video yesterday. He's throwing to his receivers. I'm like, that's what he's supposed to do. He's a quarterback. I love it, too. I'm excited, but that's what he's supposed to do. But when you look at the weaponry that Ryan Poles has put together for Chicago, what's your takeaway from this offense that the Bears should be able to execute?
I think the right and the wrongs that they it wasn't them, but the right and the wrongs that happened with Justin Fields. You look at the situation that he came into with the lack of weapons to throw the ball to. Yeah. I mean, last year, you just take a look at how good he was when he threw the ball to DJ Moore. I mean, there were statistics on that, over 110 quarterback rating, versus how good he was when he threw the ball to Velus Jones, Tyler Scott, and everybody else on the team. Very poor. So now, okay, let's bring in some high-quality receivers like Keenan Allen, like Gerald Everett, okay, obviously Romo Odunze, So now you got three of those guys that you can throw the ball to that are going to make the 50-50 catches, the tough catches. If the ball isn't perfect, instead of having one of those guys, now you got three. So I love what Poles is doing. His thoughts were to put playmakers around his quarterback, and I like that. Some people say maybe you should have added more depth to the offensive line, and I would have been okay with that. But I'm a guy that likes bringing in the weapons. I think Braxton can play. He can play well enough, and he can improve as a small school guy myself. I think those guys have higher ceilings, you know, maybe lower floors, but he's got a long way to go. He wasn't used to playing against this type of competition his whole life in college. He went to Southern Utah. I went to Missouri State University. That's tough. So I think he's going to continue to improve. And then the running back situation, DeAndre Swift. I watched a lot of Eagles last year. I covered them for Inside the Birds podcast network, watched every Eagles game. DeAndre Swift is one of the best players on that offense, and that's talking about an offense with A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. Very underrated player. The guy could run the ball. He could catch the ball at the backfield. He's actually pretty good at protection for a guy that's smaller and not known for it. So I love his game. He's got some wiggle. He's got more power and strength than you think. So you couple that with these receivers, and obviously we still got Roschon Johnson and Khalil Herbert, who we know can tote the rock. I still like those guys. I think the offense is looking good. Only question is depth in the offensive line. I mean, you still got Borum. You got the rookie tackle. But if one of your tackles goes down, I mean, this is going to be a little bit – you know, tough. And then your centers, I'm not sure you upgraded. I'm not sure how much you upgraded. And then tight end, if Cole Kmet goes down, I love Gerald Everett, but I mean, there's really no depth after Kmet for a guy that can play that Y inline tight end. You're really going to have to change up your game plan, maybe go some spread 11 personnel. So maybe bring in a veteran Mercedes Lewis back, something like that, a guy that you know can hold up in line.
Yeah, Clay, I wanted to ask you, you know, a lot of people have you know, talked about Kalen Williams and evaluated him, and you played with a lot of quarterbacks during your time in the NFL. What quarterback traits, from your standpoint, that are must-haves for a quarterback to be great and for a quarterback to succeed in this league? Because we've seen a lot of first-round quarterbacks, they haven't panned out, a lot of first-round busts. But what have you seen from Kalen Williams that makes you say, you know what, this guy has a lot of traits that will make him successful and that will make him pan out as a first-round pick?
It's his attitude, man, and everybody that's talked to him, his attitude. He knows he's not some guy that's going to go, I'm a first-round pick, the first overall. He's a guy that's going to work. And as cliche as it sounds, I've played with a lot of good quarterbacks, like you said, Jason, in Tom Brady. I'll tell this story. When I signed with the New England Patriots, going back, I was with the Jaguars for 3 years. I regret leaving Jacksonville. I had an offer to stay there for 3 more years. Yeah. I decided I wanted to go to New England, have the opportunity to win a Super Bowl. I'm going to play with Belichick, Brady, Gronk, whatever. So I go to New England. I remember our first day of meetings, you know, walking in there. Tom had been there for 16 years in the same offense at this point. Okay, walk in there. You know, Tom's already sitting in the first row. I find my seat. You know, I'm ready to take some notes. And Tom Brady's in the front row. He's taking notes. He is so engaged in these meetings. I go, what's he taking notes on? Stick figures? He's drawing stick figures? This guy's been in this offense for 16 years. He's acting like a rookie. To me, what it comes down to is who's willing to put that work in. I go back to Drew Brees. My last year was with the Saints. I mean, this guy, I remember he brought together some players, and this is what you see a Caleb doing. He brought together me and Kobe Fleener, and he flew us out to San Diego. First-class tickets. Puts us up in a 5-star hotel, picks us up every morning at 6 a.m. He does all this just so we can go to the field and get a few training sessions in. He pays for our training sessions, and then he flies us back home for 5 days. That's the type of guy, the type of things you're hearing about Kalen Williams. Those are the guys that are successful. I played with Blake Bortles, love Blake Bortles, but the year before that, I'm with the Jaguars. You know, Blake would go out to California to get some thrown in before the season. Blake misses a couple of the days. We're out there. The guy's out there. He went out the night before, got a little, you know, banged up a little bit, you know, had a couple too many cocktails. Hey, let's just do this tomorrow. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Sometimes the stuff ain't that difficult to see. You right. see Drew, you see Tom, then you see my guy Blake, who I love, but you can see things. And that's why I think Caleb's going to be successful because he has the right mindset. He's in there working. He's studying. He says he wants to be the guy that learns the playbook super fast. So if anybody has questions, they can come to him. So that's why I think Caleb's going to be successful. Besides all the obvious stuff, He can throw inside. He can throw outside. He's got that off-schedule ability. He's got a good arm. The ball just comes out of his hand spinning. Yes, he's got all that. But to me, the work ethic is the most important.
We've been excited about quarterbacks before like this, though, Clay. You know, like we've been ready to crown guys, the next guy, and say, here it is. We finally got our franchise quarterback. Is Caleb going to be the one to break the cycle? He started off with one of the best situations that any quarterback that I've seen. Maybe, and we keep saying kind of like, outside of Andrew Luck, I think there's a better situation than what Andrew Luck came into. Andrew Luck to like 65 sacks through two seasons. Like he was getting beat up a lot. But is Caleb going to be the one that breaks the cycle of bad for the Chicago Bears in your mind?
He is the one, you know, the Matrix. He is the one. I see it, guys. I think so. And like you said, Pat, it comes down to he is coming into a situation where he has these weapons. And as Jason knows, like it's great to have, you know, weapons. And here's why. If you're a rookie, you're a young Justin Fields, you got guys that aren't running the crisp routes. You start developing bad habits because you're losing confidence if your guys can get open. You see this one-on-one down the field. You're hesitating because you don't know if your guy's going to get open and make the play. Now Caleb's coming in with these veteran guys that have done it, that know how to play the game, that run crisp routes, that can catch the ball even if it's not right in their eyes. If it's a little low, they're going to catch the ball.
Yeah.
Now that takes some pressure off. You won't start developing these bad habits. Now you got a solid offensive line. Offensive line could be better. Good running game. Really good running game. Solid running back. So now you can lean on that. We all know how important a good running game is. Pound the rock. You get them down. You get them in cover three. Now you got one-on-ones on the outside with DJ Moore and Keenan Allen. So sometimes you can oversimplify the game of football, and that's how you simplify it.
Right.
And you got the players to do that. When you don't have the players, it makes it more difficult to do that. You got to try to scheme up all these crazy things. The Bears got some dogs this year. They got some dogs. They got one of the best receiver corps in the NFL. And like you said, Pat, I do think this is the best and number one quarterback, and maybe first round quarterback in history has had. Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, two top 10 receivers. Cole Kmet's a top 10 tight end. In my opinion, DeAndre Swift is a top 10 running back. You got top 10 players at every piece of your offense. So I love it, and that's why I think he's going to be successful. Obviously, he's got the talent, but he's also got talent surrounding him.
Yeah, Cole, I want to talk about the tight end group, you know, position that you're real familiar with. And, you know, you talk about Shane Waldron and having scheme versatility and you having two tight ends in Cole Kmet and Gerald Everett. Now you can be creative. You can go 12 personnel a lot more. And we know how in this league a tight end can be a quarterback's best friend, especially a rookie quarterback like Caleb Williams. Talk about – you know, how much pressure it puts on the defense and having two tight ends that can do a lot of different things, you know, being able to Cole Kmet, being able to be effective in the run game, but Gerald Everett the same way, but then also being able to stretch the field. Talk about how that creates matchup problems for defense.
Yeah, Jason, I think it's huge because the type of tight end that Everett is, but I mean, you guys have probably heard me gush about Kmet, right? So here's why I love Kmet. Kmet's a guy that can catch the football, obviously, over the middle, takes the big shots. But Jason, as you know, there was a different breed of tight end before. A guy that you could line up on the strength and you could have him block a defensive end or an outside linebacker. You double team, a triple block, you know, or you can have him solo on the edge. Nowadays, these tight ends, you have to line them up off the line, you have to sift them backside, arc release him to a safety, arc release him to not Cole Kmet. Cole Kmet, he can lock up a defensive end. That's uncommon. And for him to be able to do that and catch the ball in the seam and run the way it does is very uncommon. I played with Gronk. I played with Eric Ebron. I played with Martellus Bennett. You know, I played with a lot of these good tight ends. And he reminds me of a lot of these big-time guys. And I think if he keeps improving, I'm not saying he's going to be in the same category as Gronk, but he's going to be known as one of the best tight ends in the league because he can do both. And with a guy like him, that creates problems for defenses. You bring in Gerald Everett. You don't know if they're going to be in a tight set or you can split out. Kmet can split out too. So now you're bringing in your linebackers. All of a sudden, Waldron says, hey, we're going to bring in our two tight ends, but now Gerald Everett's so versatile, we can put him outside. That puts stress on a defense because now if it's man-to-man, you got your linebacker lined up outside. Okay, now you already know it's man-to-man. And then if you don't, if you got your linebacker inside, the tight end's outside, now you got a cornerback guarding a tight end, and you got a linebacker that's going to have to guard a wide receiver in the slot. So that's how you're having these versatile tight ends. We'll put pressure on defenses. You can create matchups. You can obviously, if you got guys that are that can do both, you can create favorable situations in the blocking game. If the defense wants to stay in nickel or dime, which they do to a lot of these guys like Travis Kelce, Evan Ingram, we're talking about the London game, who had 100 catches last year at tight end. Yeah. He's not a guy that's going to be attached. He's more of a receiver. He can sit backside. He can arc release. And, I mean, he gives effort, but he's just not a guy that can stay in line. So I think Waldron, who's known for two and three tight end sets, is going to love having these two guys because they can play so well off of each other, commit with the inline stuff, Everett backside cutoff, but also can split out and do a lot of other stuff. Versatile, going to put a lot of pressure on defenses for matchups.
Does Cole's value to you come from that versatility? Because I remember me and J-Mac sitting in the training camp, like, the alert came through. I was like, they just gave Cole Kmet $50 million. J-Mac looked at me. He's like, that's a lot of money. He got to show out a little bit for me. And to say that he was bad last year, but, you know, the touchdown numbers, and maybe that goes back to the quarterback. Maybe that goes back to what was called for him. But I would think with the size of Cole Kmet, seeing him around the red zone, you would expect him to be a 9, 10, 11 touchdown guy. He's always been kind of a 7 touchdown guy. He hasn't been that guy that's going to get breakaway speed on you, right? He's going to catch the ball, but he's going to go down once he catches it. But does the blocking kind of make up for that value, that the rest of the value that you're looking for on there? Or do you expect more from him offensively this season, higher numbers, higher touchdown numbers, stuff like that?
You know, first off, let me start by saying the first time I saw Cole Kmet, I was on the field at training camp, and, you know, I'm a pretty big guy, you know, whatever, you know, like 6'3", 245, something like that. And I turn around, I'm like, who is this big dude just towering over? That's Cole Kmet?
Yeah.
This dude is a monster. He's 6'6", 265, 270. Like the dude off of Happy Gilmore.
I believe that jacket belongs to Mr. Gilmore.
This guy is a monster, first of all. But you're exactly right, Pat. His value comes from the fact that he can do everything. In a system like the Bears run with the, you know, the Chicago style, we want to be able to pound the rock and throw the football down the seam. Cole Kmet fits that perfectly. There's not a lot of tight ends that can do that today. He's not like Sam LaPorta ain't doing that. Travis Kelce ain't doing that. There's guys that have better numbers, but they're not going to be able to stick in line and do the things they can do in the Bears running game. And that's such an important part about what you need to do in Chicago and with the system that Eberflus wants to run. It increases his value because he can catch the football. He can find the hole in the zone. He is a big target. I'm not saying he's the best man-on-man tight end that's just going to route somebody up and get open, but he's so big. Like, I mean, you can just put the ball in this guy's body and he's going to catch it because he's just monstrous. Yeah. But I really think they honestly got a deal for him. And this year, I don't think his numbers are going to go up. But that, I mean, how many people can you throw the football to? You know, we got Rome, we got Keenan, we got DJ. They're saying it's a race to 1,000. Where does that leave my man Kmet? And then you got Gerald Everett.
Yeah.
And then you got out the backfield, you got Swift. So I think Kmet's probably not going to have the biggest statistical season, but he knows he's a guy that another reason I love him, doesn't care. He's saying, no, I don't. You listen to him after the game. He has two catches. He goes, I had one of my better games. I blocked my tail off, and, you know, we ran the ball for 200 yards. That's the kind of guy I want to play tight end. Call me old school, Jason. You know, back in the 2009 draft when I came out, you had to block.
You were
out here being pretty, doing all this bachelorette stuff. You had to put your helmet on, and you had to block. So that's why I like Kmet.
Yeah, like we say, you don't block, you don't get the rock, man. You ain't blocking, we ain't throwing the ball to you. So, you know, you mentioned all those blue chip players. You know, you talk about Keenan Allen, we talk about DJ Moore, Cole Kmet, DeAndre Swift. And your assessment on the offensive side of the ball, who is an under the radar guy that you want to see step up, or that you think could step up and have a huge role in this offense? Somebody we're not talking about as much.
No, so there's two guys. It's a good question, Jason. There's two guys that I think that actually need to step up. First, I love the receiver core. Your top three is stacked, and obviously we've got to see what Rome can do against NFL talent. But, you know, I think it's pretty easy to see that what this guy has some ability, right? But after that, one of these guys go down with a hamstring here or there, a calf. Okay, now you only got two. Who's going to step up? Tyler Scott or Velus Jones at this point. I think Pettis is still on the roster. I'm not sure.
Yeah, they brought him back. They brought Pettis back.
So of those three guys, you need someone to step into that fourth role because you will run some four wide, but also when one of these guys need a break, or, I mean, Keenan Allen's 32, 33 years old, so you need a guy that you know can step up and catch the football in those places. So I think that's going to be important. I'm hoping it's Tyler Scott just because of his speed, what he's able to bring. If you got Tyler Scott, who's a 4-3 guy on the field, or, I mean, Velus, I feel like, you know, Velus has just had such a hard time holding on to the football. If he can really turn things around with his explosiveness, you can use him in screens, you can use him in sweeps and things like that. So one of those two young receivers, or even Dante Pettis, I know he's a veteran, but I'd love to see one of them step up. And then Roschon Johnson. I think we all kind of fell in love with Roschon last year when he got his opportunity. Oh, yeah. I mean, he's a hard runner. I mean, Jason, I know you want to block for that guy. Yeah. I want to block for that guy. You know he's given 100% every time he touched the ball. He's going to make that defensive – the linebacker, whoever that tackles him, you can make him feel it. So for me, I love blocking for that guy. You know, if you give him a little crease, he's going to hit the hole hard. There's no dancing. He ain't going to be too cute. And he's just a guy that you know is going to give everything. He's got to improve a little bit in protection. He's a guy that he's good. He can do it. But, you know, make sure that he knows everything he's supposed to do mentally. And so those are my two guys. Obviously, Roschon, love when he gets the ball, how hard he runs. And then Tyler Scott and Velus. Let's see one of those guys step up, because you do need that second tier receivers if there's an injury, somebody needs a break, or, you know, anything happens there.
It's so interesting, right, with this London game matching up, having both of you guys on here. But the matchup of first overall picks, before we got on, you talked about that generational tag being thrown around. J-Mac, me and J-Mac say, it was like, it's thrown around way too much out here. But yeah. Trevor Lawrence was a guy who was labeled with that generational tag and, you know, everything that he went through. But now he has Doug Peterson, a Super Bowl winning coach, a guy who knows how to call an offense, guy who's been a quarterback in the NFL. He knows how to set a guy up for success. So there's kind of still this belief with Trevor that, like, Doug will figure him out. Doug will get things right. Don't worry about that. When you look across the field and you see Shane Waldron and you see Matt Eberflus, I know, listen, Matt Eberflus looking fresh out here, nice fade, fresh beard, but we can't pretend like people weren't talking about replacing him at the end of the season. How do you feel like the coaching staff on the other side, not the looks, I'm talking about the actual coaching part of it, how do you feel like they match up kind of with the Jaguars in that aspect?
One of the things I really got to give the Jaguars credit on is after that first year, you know, when Trevor had such a down season, I think 10 touchdowns, 17 picks, one of the worst completion percentages, one of the worst pass ratings in the NFL under Urban Meyer. What did they do the next season? You bring in Doug Peterson. Then you bring in former quarterbacks coach, offense coordinator, Press Taylor.
Yeah.
You bring in former head coach, former offensive coordinator, former quarterback coach, Mike McCoy. You bring in former quarterback coach, Jim Bob Cooter, former offensive coordinator, Jim Bob Cooter. Now you have this support system around Trevor Lawrence of all former offensive coordinators, quarterback coaches, and even Doug, who played quarterback in the league for a number of years. Mike McCoy was Peyton Manning's coach for a number of years. So that's why you saw that big jump, in my opinion, of Trevor Lawrence. You put all these guys around him, he's going to improve.
Yeah.
And they did an excellent job at that. And unfortunately, the way that, you know, for the Jaguars, how it works, if you have success, you're going to lose some of these guys. They had success. Jim Bob Cooter's gone. Mike McCoy's gone. Now it's kind of just Press Taylor, Doug Peterson, and you had a little bit of a fallback year. But I think that's what you really need to do to support your young quarterbacks. Give him a plethora of guys, of assets that you can use. You can throw questions off. You can get coached in different ways. They see different things to help them out. I think it's an interesting coaching matchup because, obviously, Doug Peterson, offensive guy, spreads the football around. One of the most creative coaches in football, Andy Reid tree. You know, yeah. I played under Doug Peterson. He was a quarterback coach in the Eagles. My 3 years there, it was Doug Peterson, Andy Reid type, very, very creative coach, is going to run a reverse, is going to do a double reverse, is going to spread you out, is going to put you tight in. So Eberflus is going to have to come with his bag. And obviously Eric Washington as well, but we know Eberflus is calling the plays.
Yep.
Eric Washington is going to help with that as well. And one of the things that really hurts the Jaguars is something that I don't think is a Bears strength, and that's pressure. Obviously, they improved with Montez Sweat, but I think you're missing a second guy here, right? We're hoping Jervon Dexter can turn into that guy to get some pressure from the inside. But DeMarcus Walker's are starting edge right now, opposite of Sweat. I mean, I think you can find a guy out there, a free agent still, that could get some wins, because you're going to have people double team and Sweat, and now you're going to get a lot of one on ones in the backside. So I think Eberflus, he did a better job of this blitzing last year, creating some different formations, some different blitzes at the end of last year. So I think that's what you need to do. The Jaguars against pressure, that's when you start to see Trevor make some mistakes. That's when you see this offensive line start to miss some guys, have some miscommunications of running backs. So creating pressure, if you can't do it the front four, you got to start. You got to show some exotic blitzes, and I think we have the players to do that. And that's one of the things the Jaguars struggle to handle.
Yeah, I think, you know, you're talking about the Bears, and we saw Eberflus do this a lot last year before the addition of Montez Sweat, trying to generate pressure, bringing second level pressure with them linebackers, and even third level pressure with those safeties. You know, when you do those things, it creates voids in that defense, and receivers will fill that void that's left by whoever's blitzing. So, you know, I'm kind of worried, you know, despite when you have a quarterback that has elite talent, that has elite arm talent like a Trevor Lawrence, when you have, you know, you may not have the greatest amount of receivers, but if the Bears have to bring second level pressure and third level pressure, it creates a lot of opportunities for these receivers to fill those voids left by that blitzer. And we know Trevor Lawrence is definitely smart enough to find those guys. And, you know, we talked about the generational thing, right? And when I look at generational, right, we talk about Trevor Lawrence and Clay, you did a great job of describing how Jacksonville brought in the coaches and brought the infrastructure around Trevor Lawrence. But when I look at generational, I'm like, okay, if I'm looking to bring in a quarterback that's generational, he's supposed to overcome the lack of, you know, weapons we have. He's supposed to overcome the deficiencies that we have because he's generational. That's why we're taking him, because we know, okay, we may be lacking in terms of our tight end room. We may not have a third receiver. We may not have the best running game, but this quarterback is so talented. He's a multiplier. He can cover up a lot of deficiencies that we may have. And that's why I say, you know, we're talking about generational, and everybody's throwing that word out. So
yeah.
You know, when they say Caleb Williams is generational, you know, I say, okay, he didn't have a defense at USC. And the thing I worry about Caleb Williams is, you know, when you're playing against like Jaden Daniels, you're playing against an SEC defense, which is the closest thing that you're going to get to an NFL defense, right? And you look at Caleb Williams playing against, you know, Washington State and defenses that give up a lot of points and stuff like that. I'm just interested to see how his game translates, but I'm also interested to see, and this is my question for you, what type of offense do you see Shane Waldron implementing for Caleb Williams for him to be successful and for him to develop and grow at a rapid rate, so that way this Bears offense can be as prolific as we hope they can be?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a great question. I think it's going to be a versatile offense. I think with the weapons they have, obviously, you see them majoring in like a three wide spread zone type offense, and obviously in Seattle, he had a similar type receiver room with Lockett, with DK Metcalf, and
Jackson Smith and Jigba.
Yeah, Jackson Smith and Jigba, right? So you saw him in a lot of three receiver sets, but he also did use his tight end. So I think something similar to that, because I mean, obviously you look at Geno Smith, you look at Caleb Williams. I think Caleb is similar in some ways to what Geno's done. We all hope and believe that he's better than Geno Smith, right? But
yeah, if we got Geno Smith, I'm upset. I'm not going to lie to you.
But the Geno of late, you know, the Geno of the last couple years is actually a solid quarterback, getting the ball out, getting the ball to his playmakers and doing a solid job. And I think Shane Waldron deserves a lot of credit for that, because Geno coming to the Seahawks was one of the worst quarterbacks in terms of completion percentage, getting the ball out on time, quarterback rating. And he comes to Seattle, and now he's top five in the league in all these things, which is obviously Shane Waldron is part of the reason for that. So I see a kind of an offense similar to that, just because they do have a similar makeup. I think the Bears have better players at those positions, but a little bit upgraded. Geno, Caleb, right? You got Jackson Smith and Jigma, Romo Dunze, right? DK, DJ, and Keenan, you know, I think these are guys that have similar skill sets, but now the Bears are just a little bit better there. Solid running game, so you're going to see a similar offense to what you saw at Seattle, which was a three-wide offense that also did have a lot of two tight end set. Let's run them out. Let's tighten them back in, create mismatch problems. So I think with Caleb, you could do it all. You could go under center because he's a guy that does have vision to give her the ball quick. He can turn his back to the defense, run fake, turn around, find his guy. Or he's a guy that can, hey, shotgun, we're going to spread you out, and he's going to pick and choose where he wants to throw the ball. So I think it's going to be a versatile offense, similar to what you saw at Seattle the last couple of years when they were able to take a step up when Geno got there.
It's so interesting you bring up, right, kind of the steps that Geno took. And this to me applies to Caleb, because my question is, how much of modern player NFL development do you think is still on the NFL coaching staff versus these guys' personal coaches? We heard from Caleb that, right, Kerry Joseph, that his, you know, they had Caleb so far prepared that they're like, all right, we got to start teaching the kids stuff. Like, we got to make the most out of rookie minicamp. Like, we didn't expect him to be this prepared. But Caleb took that into his own hand, right? You talk about Tom Brady. Tom Brady was one of the first people that was like, this is my personal guru that's going to help me get better. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to take that and utilize that on the field. How much of the development of the modern NFL player is on the coaching staff to develop versus the player kind of taking it into his own hands and saying, no, I'm going to be great in this league. It's on me.
Hey, J-Mac can attest to this, right? So back in the day, they talk about OTA number. There was no number. There were just OTAs. You were just doing OTA after OTA after OTA. And was there any no contact OTA? You're playing football in these OTAs. There was no number day. You just knew you were showing up and you had practice that day. And just like training camp, you'd come to training camp. I remember my rookie year, so excited about the NFL. They had me questioning my life. I only had two of the old training camps. Okay, then Andy Reid had us there 24 straight days, no days off as a rookie. So back in the day, I know I sound like a grandpa telling war stories. You know, back in my day, the team had a lot more responsibility with these players because you had so much time, OTA after OTA, and these were fast. You're basically hitting these guys.
Yeah.
There's no rules like there are now. Training camp, do whatever you wanted. You're doing two tackle practices a day, two a days. Now they get a day off every third practice.
Man.
So back in the day, this was more on the team because you just had them for so long. Two practices a day, no days off. I mean, that's the hashtag no days off. There was really no days off. And then the OTAs, as many as you wanted. So the team could just mold you, break you down, mold you, create you into what they wanted to. Now you're getting 10 OTAs. Training camp, you only get 3 days on, 1 day off, and they can't even be full tackle practices. So now it does come a lot to the player and these coaches that they have helping them because you just don't get as much time. Yeah. It's a huge deal that Caleb's willing to go out there and have a guy coach him, train him, realize he doesn't have all the time just because of the new NFL rules and the collective bargaining. You can't spend that much time there. So that's really important nowadays as opposed to it was back when me and J-Mac were playing and they say, hey, you're just showing up and you're here and we're practicing every single day. So great question, Pat. And that is one of the things that have changed over the years is you do need these personal coaches.
Yeah, and I think, going more off of what you're talking about, Clay, and your question, Pat, I think when you talk about development, right, if you're an upper echelon guy, meaning if you're a guy that's drafted in like the top four rounds, you know what I'm saying? They're going to they're going to develop you, right? Because they can't be wrong on that pick. So like Caleb, right, despite, if he's not picking up the playbook at a rapid rate, well, they'll slow it down because they got to make sure he develops into what they drafted him to be. Now, if you're an undrafted free agent like myself or one of the lower end guys, right, guess what? There's no development. You've got to come in and show what you can do. Like, we expect you, when we put you in, to know what you're doing, right? And they're going to give you – Clay knows the installs is crazy. Like, the daily install is crazy. You got to know so much, and then you got to go out there and the next day, and you got to execute it. And if you're a low-end guy or undrafted guy, guess what? One or two mistakes, you're off that team. Whereas a guy who's drafted in the top four rounds, he's going to get more of a chance to make mistakes. He can make those mistakes because they have something invested in him. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of pressure in terms of, like, we're talking about development. There's one aspect of the upper echelon guys being developed by the coaches. But if you're a low-end guy, you better be developed and you better know your stuff. Otherwise, your name tag is going to be removed off your locker and that coach is going to say, hey, you know what? Turn in that playbook and good luck to you. So, you know,
well, there's no reason for you to take a shot at Velus Jones like that. I mean, oh, I'm sorry. I apologize.
Now look. And Clay saw this too. You know, Richard Hightower, who's been a big advocate of Velus Jones, he talked about, hey, the new kickoff rule is going to benefit Velus Jones the most because now it gives him an opportunity to get the ball in his hands, okay, and he can go out there and really, you know, when he has the ball in his hands, he's electric. You know what I mean? The problem is getting the ball in his damn hands. So now he has an opportunity to go out there and to use his speed, his powers, athleticism to create something on kickoff return. So you heard Hightower say he's excited to see how this new rule is going to affect Velus. He thinks it's going to, you know, help him. And as we know, Hightower loves Velus Jones, so don't be surprised if Velus is number one kickoff returner again this year.
What do you think of this, Jason? The kickoff rules, man. I was, you know, I'm like I said, I know I'm old school here, but that was one of the reasons I'm making teams because I was a tight end that could run down on kickoff and kick return. You know, you can stone somebody first when I get in there. You have the wedge, then they make it the four man wedge, and then it's, you can only have two people together. And then, I love that part of the game because for me, that's the way I could separate myself. Yep. And nobody's gonna know how that feeling when you're running, you're an R4, R5, you're going down the middle of the field, your head's on a swivel, you don't know who's blocking. You can watch all the tape, and you get in there and you just make a play. Like that was some intense stuff. And I know you're protecting players, but man, I wish that was still a part of football. As a player, I know it could lead to a concussion here then, but I loved that part of the game. The kickoff return, you know, you're looking the guy off. Next thing you know, you're blindsiding him. You got that trap block. Okay, do I go for this big hit or do I try to play it safe and just wall him off? Man, those were good parts of the game, and I know they're trying to fix it somehow with this new kickoff return rule. I think it's getting a little bit too gimmicky, and I know I'm old school with this, but man, I missed that kickoff return. I just want to get your thoughts on that.
100%. Like, you know, even going back to the kickoff, and when we broadcast the game on the radio, you know, we don't even talk about the kickoff because we know it's a touchback. And the first thing we say, oh, here we go again. It's a touchback. And it's really, you know, it's a free rep for the guys on kickoff because what do? They just got to run through the end zone so they get a plus on their grade sheet, you know, come Monday morning. And, you know, Clay, like back in the day, like we talked about, if you're a lower end guy, you know, a low draft pick or an undrafted free agent, you better be, you know, fighting tooth and nail to be on that special teams. I mean, we had guys back in the day during special teams practice cutting the line so that way they can be the first one in that group or whatever you know, fundamental period that they were doing, so that way they could be noticed, they could be seen. And I think now with the way they, you know, taken away the wedge and they've changed the kickoff and stuff like that, I just think you're limiting guys' opportunities to make the team. You know what I'm saying? And then it's tough because it's such an explosive play. And I had the opportunity to be the middle up back on the wedge. And we had a guy who's going into the Hall of Fame and Devin Hester, you know, here in a couple of months. And, you know, that was such a key part of us being able to go on a Super Bowl run and having a guy like that behind us. But we took pride in it. And I can recall, you know, my running back coach saying, hey, you know what, J-Mac, when we get to the playoffs, we're taking you off the wedge because I'm the only fullback on the roster. And I'm like, well, no. Don't take me off the way. No, take me off offense. I want to stay on kickoff return because you know, we were making plays and you wanted to be a part of that. Like it was such a highlight of the game. Like, no, take me off offense, but you're going to take me off kickoff return.
That really tells you where our offense has been in the past. Doesn't really say a lot.
But the funny thing is, I mean, we were like, it was awesome because we had guys in our locker room, you know, Brian Urlachers and Mike Browns. I said, hey, you know what? If Devin returns this kick, I've got $500 per man on the kickoff return team if Devin returns the kick. And then you have Brian Urlacher saying, yeah, I'll do the same thing. Olin Cruz is like, yeah, I'll do the same thing. So when Devin was returning kick, sometimes we were getting paid like $1,500 cash. And I'm like, don't take me. This is good money. Don't take me off because he's going to take two back in the game. That's $3,000 right there.
J-Mac, like, I know I'm in the NFL, but I'm feeding my family off these kickoffs, man. Like,
$3,000 cash, you know what I mean? And then, oh, man, that's love right there, man. That's good money you can, you know.
How do y'all,
How do y'all think they're going to scheme this? Because that's the one thing that I feel like nobody's really talking about. I don't know if you've seen a ton of the UFL at all, but like when you watch it, it kind of looks like the old kickoff, but almost not at all. Like it's how is this going to be schemed up so that, of course, it's going to create returns because they're going to return the football. But I could see a lot of teams basically just saying, this is stupid. Like, get as much as you can and get down. Like, don't sit there and get yourself hurt because they're trying to force us to do this.
I mean, it's going to be interesting. The one thing I really haven't done is turned on that tape of the UFL and really checked out what it looks like in person. And that's something, I need to do, because that's going to be a big part of the game. And you know, these special teams coach, J-Mag, they're going to try to do, they're going to think of everything on the kickoff. Isn't there the rule, like, even if it hits the ground, you got to wait for the guy to touch it? I'm not really sure the exact. So,
there's 20 yards where basically it has to land in. It can't go, if it lands in the end zone, now it's at the 35. So basically, here, have a touchdown if you got a good offense. If it lands short of the zone, it's at the 35. So, have a touchdown.
Yeah.
And if it goes out of bounds, it's all the same. But now they basically have to wait for the ball to get in the guy's hands, turn around, check him, make sure that he's okay, allow him to breathe, and then he starts returning the football.
It's wild.
Yeah, it's going to be weird. It's going to be – I mean, when you look at, the offensive – the kickoff return, the scheme is going to be a lot different. Because like you talked about, Clay, on kickoff return, all right, we're trapping the five. That means we're going to blindside the five, or we're going to double the four. Like, you're not going to have time to do that because they're going to be so close – you're not going to be able to get a good drop. So I think it's going to be a lot of one-on-one blocks, but I think it's going to be tough, because if you're on that kickoff cover team, right, you're going to have to do your best to make your man miss, but you're also going to have to be able to tackle, because it's going to be such a tight space. But it's going to create, it's going to create opportunities for a guy like Bayless, who, like I said, is a bigger, faster, stronger guy, who's borderline a running back. It's going to create opportunities. So I think it's going to bring about a lot more big plays in the return game than we've seen in the past, because of everything being a touchback. But I love the rule, because it brings that play back into the game. Like, it was just non-existent for so long. Like, we talked about it on the air. Me and Jeff Joniak would say, man, why don't they just give the team the ball? Like, flip a coin and give the team the ball. Like, it's so stupid we're doing this, because everything's a touchback, So
do you guys think, and I think that this is the part that I love about the NFL. This is what excites me about it. When something new comes out, it seems like it works initially. So I feel like the first 5-6 weeks of the season, there's going to be this influx of kickoff returns. Oh, the rule works. It's a miracle. Oh, praise it. And then all of a sudden, special teams coaches are going to be like, oh, we got 6 weeks of tape on this now. We figured it out. Okay, this is how we stop this. Do you think that this rule is going to be effective long term, or is this just another thing that it's going to NFL coaches are going to be able to adjust to, and then all of a sudden we're having the same conversation again?
I hope so, but you guys know what it is. It's a copycat league. One coach is going to figure some crazy scheme out, and then the rest of them are going to do that. It's just such a copycat league. It just takes one coach, one play, to figure out some little loophole or something, and the whole league has that same tape. They're watching the same tape we are, that you are. So then something can happen. What I'm curious is, you got everybody on the same level. Like, okay, how are we going to do the safety? The safeties now. It's like, how are you going to – are there going to be loops? Are you going to loop around? It's like, what kind of schemes are you going to do on the kickoff team for a kickoff return team? I'm glad that it's in there. It's going to create more. Like J-Mac said – I mean, that was a fun part of the game. That created jobs for people, man. People that were willing to do the things that other guys didn't want to. You were willing to go out there on the kickoff and kickoff return, where a lot of the time you're not getting a ton of credit if you're just one of the guys on the kickoff return team. But that matters. That field position is big, and you're doing this service that really nobody knows about except for, your special team coach, your head coach will, go over it, and then your teammates. So I love that they're trying to bring it back. But to answer your question, I think it just takes one coach to figure out one loophole, and then the rest of the league is gonna follow suit. So I'm hoping it's something that can stay, but I got a feeling that something's gonna happen to where they're gonna figure something out. It's not gonna be as nice as we hope.
Yeah, Clay, I want to ask you. So I know the biggest the biggest adjustment for a rookie is just learning the playbook. And a lot of these rookies are going through it right now. You know, we talked about OTAs and mini camp is coming up. You know, tell Bears fans and the viewers, like, how hard it is to pick up the verbiage and how long some of these calls are. Like, you know, a lot of people talk about the offense and stuff like that, but not a lot of people have been in the huddle like me and you have. Talk about how difficult it is to really pick up an offense in terms of verbiage and then understanding where you're supposed to be within the verbiage and then going out there on the practice field and executing, you know, what you've learned in the install meeting.
Oh yeah. So I've been a guy that fortunately and unfortunately that's been on a lot of different teams and has to pick up a lot of different offenses. So we'll start later in my career. Say when I told you guys I left Jacksonville, you know, looking back, I should have stayed, go to New England. After six games, I end up getting released from New England. The very next day, I signed with the Detroit Lions. That weekend, I'm starting against the Vikings, right? Late in my career, I became great at learning a playbook. I could mnemonic devices. The coaches, I remember going in there. He's trying to, like, Diego, coach, just give me 2 hours with this book. Come back. You can quiz me, and we'll go from there. And he's like, you don't want me to, like, he's all concerned. I'm like, trust me. Like, I've got my system planned. But as a rookie, I struggled. I was one of the guys that, you know, in Philly, I get there and they're like, hey, man, you're really not picking up. I'm trying to learn on field, off field. You didn't really have that system set up, J-Max. So for these rookies, to me, what it comes down to is you got to figure out the way you're going to learn. At Missouri State, I mean, we had like 10 run plays and 10 pass plays that we were going to do. Okay. I knew that. It was easy. You look at this book, you get there, the Bears playbook, Shane Waldron, this thing is thick, man. It's like a history book. And I'm talking about like the history of the world, bro.
I saw Dan Orlovsky post his rookie QB book, and it was like, yeah.
I'm going, why? Right? So you got to figure out your system of how to do that. And for these rookies, could take 1 year, could take two, could take three. Some players, you know, SEC probably had different style of plays than me in the FCS, Missouri Valley Conference, but it took a while. And it's difficult. It takes a lot of work, and it takes figuring out the way you learn and having those conversations with yourself. Because, like you said, if you're one of those guys that's not in the first, you know, three, four rounds, they're not throwing the train down for you to get on. If you don't get on, if you don't run and jump on this train, they ain't stopping. They ain't slowing that down. If you can't figure it out, you're one of these guys that's not a key cog, they're going to leave you behind. So it's important, and it is hard when you first get there because that book is thick.
It's so funny because, like, this is – like, when I saw that, it's so – I don't think people get a sense of it now that players are getting on podcasts and things like that. We get to kind of see the lives that you guys lived. When Dan Orlovsky showed that book, he was like, this is the first book they gave me, and this is part of it. Yeah. And this is just for the quarterbacks. I don't know what everybody else had. And it was like this thick. And I was like, yo, Twitter is a great place, but, like, y'all got to stop acting like y'all can play in the NFL. Acting like y'all know what you're looking at on this All-22. Right. Y'all got to stop acting like you got all the answers. Oh, this is the blocking scheme that they were going with on them. Like, nah, bro. Like, it's so good to get this insight now. And I think this is great insight having you two on the podcast. This is a special moment. Both of you guys starting your career with Andy Reid, just rapid fire to you here. Biggest memory from Andy Reid. Biggest memory from being coached by Coach Reid.
Go ahead, Jim.
Man, my favorite thing was with Andy Reid. It was cool because, you know, he's a bigger guy. So
he always, is he now?
Bigger guy, you know, pleasantly plump. Plump. Yeah. But the cool thing was, you know, I came in, and when I came out of college, I was 230. And, you know, I played in Philadelphia, played at Temple University. So a lot of the scouts was at our games and stuff like that. So I knew it was a good chance that I could end up there, you know, possibly being drafted in the later rounds or possibly by a free agent. That's what they told me. But they made me gain weight. So the cool thing is Andy Reid loves cheeseburgers. He loves snacks, and he makes sure his guys eat. So I was one of the guys. I was underweight, so I got to eat, like, Friday. He used to send me home with, like, 20 wings and two cheeseburgers. And he had his glasses. He used to have them down like this. J-Mac, make sure you go eat them cheeseburgers now. Like, but that was one of my good memories. But in terms of the coaching staff that we had there, and I think I've told you this before, Pat, like, we had Brad Childress was our offensive coordinator, all right? We had David Culley was our wide receiver coach. Ron Rivera was a linebacker coach. Sean McDermott was the assistant DB coach. Leslie Frazier was the DB coach. Juan Castillo was the O-line coach. Like, we had a great collection of coaches that went on to have successful careers in the NFL. And I learned so much from the coaches, but also the veterans that we had on that team. Deuce Staley was a running back who I got a chance to block for.
Deuce, yeah, he was on the staff.
Yeah, me and Brian Westbrook, we came in, you know, same year as rookies. So it was such a good learning experience for me, learning from, you know, the GOAT and Andy Reid in terms of his system, because, you know, Clay will tell you, like, the verbiage in that system, we ran a West Coast offense back then, and it was the verbiage was long, where they're going to tell each receiver what they're doing. They're going to tell you the protection, the formation. So the play calling was long. So, you know, me having to learn that complex playbook, like Clay said, when I came to the Bears, it was a lot easier because the verbiage wasn't as long.
Yeah.
And, you know, we ran a lot. So it was like, okay, we're running power again. All right, bet we're running power again. Okay, we're running power again. It was a lot easier.
A lot of power.
No, man, that's great, because I got a lot of the same memories, man. We had the, you know, similar coaching staff. We actually had Dick Duran was a defensive back coach. We had Culley. We had McDermott and then we had our head coach of the Buccaneers.
Oh,
not Raheem Morris. Ty Bowles, right?
Ty Bowles is our linebacker coach. Yeah, we had Doug Peterson's a quarterback coach. You know, it was our quality control guy who was my boy. I'd be like, yo, come out and throw me 50 to 100 passes before practice. I'd be like, yo, Nagy, yo, come here. Nagy was our quality, my dude. I was like, Nags, let's go, man. I need some catches. All right, Clay, you know, coming right away. He was a quality control guy. So just the system. Awesome. Like, when you're under Andy Reid, you just have so many opportunities that these guys end up becoming head coaches and big-time coaches, and they're such smart guys. And even, like, the guy that I got drafted with, Mike Kafka, you know, he's an offensive coordinator now, and he's probably going to get a head coaching job pretty soon. We're both fourth-round picks. Mm. We're really taking, we had two picks apart, and we're both taking. So Kafka, I mean, just being able to learn from Andy Reid, and like you said, in that system – I mean, that comes down from, like, the old Packers days when they're playing, you know, the Packers are winning the Super Bowls. Marty Morenweg was my offensive coordinator. This old West Coast system that was difficult to learn, but once you learned it, it was so good to have. And the one memory I liked the most from Coach Reid was the Miracle in the Meadowlands Part 2, right? When we were losing to the Giants and the winner wins the division, you know, and the loser doesn't make the playoffs, right? And we're down 24 points with, you know, in the second half. And we come back, we win the game. I was actually on the punt return team where Deshaun took that punt back and won the game with no time on the clock. And just going in the locker room, Coach Reid was just so excited. We hit him with the Gatorade. And he looks kind of pissed off. He takes the cooler and he throws it up. And it was one of those ceilings like you'd have back in school that, you know, you could stick like pencils in. I don't know. If
Pat I remember those ceilings.
And it goes through the ceiling and comes down with half the ceiling, like the thing broke, you know, it goes through it and comes down and like half the ceiling. We're all like, what the? And everybody just got really quiet and you could hear a pin drop in there. Then all of a sudden, Coach Reid loses his mind. The rest of the players lose his mind. He starts jumping up and down. It was just this wild scene. And just remembering that was one of my favorite football memories, like winning the division. I was like, wow, dude, this stuff is crazy. And the elation we had there. Unfortunately, we lost to the Packers in the playoffs. They went on to win the Super Bowl. I'm sorry, guys. I know as Bears fans, you know, we didn't do our job there, but we only lost by four. We had a shot in the end zone at the end of the game. We were that close that year, and we ended up losing to Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. But that was probably my favorite Coach Reid memory, was just that Miracle in the Meadowlands, something I'll never forget.
Go ahead.
Did Coach Reid always have the pencil? You know, he always had the pencil. He always got it in his ear, but then he always got it in his hand. He'll talk to you with the pencil and everything.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's something that never changes. It's funny you're talking about those cheeseburgers, because, you know, on every road trip, you go, I'm a
I'm going to, you know, treat you guys to some of these cheeseburgers, best cheeseburgers here. And every, you know, before the game, you know, you have your snack the night before. When you sit down, you kind of chill with the guys and you get your snack. We always have those cheeseburgers, man.
Always.
So wait, does he just have a rotating list of every city's best cheeseburgers? Is Andy Reid the cheeseburger guy?
That's his thing. He always talks about cheeseburgers every day before the game is cheeseburger. Hey, man, we're going to. It's the last thing he says in the meeting before before the snack. He goes, all right, in Dallas, you know they have some great cheeseburgers. And then you go, get the cheeseburgers.
Like he'll be talking about mid game plan, right?
Yeah.
And he'll talk about what we're gonna do. And you think he's gonna keep going, and all of a sudden they'll just stop. He's got that pencil in his hand, he'll be like, yeah, cover two, this is gonna convert, we're gonna do this, and cheeseburgers, and you know, you can go. Everybody runs out at the meeting.
Yeah,
that was the end of the meeting. He ends the meeting with cheeseburger.
Like he could be breaking down the game plan, right? And he gets very detailed. He's a very detailed coach. That's why he's one of the best to ever do it. But you know, after you think he's going to keep going, and all of a sudden he'll sit there and he has that number two pencil, and he's like cheeseburgers, and everybody knows. All right, we out of here. We run. And we go get, you know, we go eat, or we go back to a room or whatever.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, I absolutely love it. This is the question that everybody's been waiting for, right? We got a former Bear, got a former Jaguar on the team. We've broken down this game three ways to Sunday, and we don't even know all the players that are going to be on the field for that game yet. But who do you got winning? Who y'all picking?
Talking about Bears and Jaguars?
Bears, Jags. Who you got?
Man, yeah. You know, and I don't want to just be – I hate just being a homer. Oh, I got the Bears. You know what I'm saying? Like, I like to really break down the game, and I just – you know, a lot of things – Clay knows a lot of things are going to factor into this, to travel. You know, our guy's going to be in their room. You're going to be in London. You know, you're going to have some free time. Like, a lot of that plays into it, a lot of things that you won't see. So I think on paper, I would say the Bears, but we know the game is played on grass or on turf. So, you know, we'll have to see. I think the team that can – simulate their schedule as close to normal as possible will be the team that comes out on top. You know, when you have a change in routine, a lot of guys don't adapt well to it. So I'd say whichever team can really, you know, keep their schedule similar to what they're used to would have a chance. But just on paper, you got to say the Bears.
Yeah. So I got two things here. The first one is, J-Mac, you got to give the it's not home field, but you got to give the home field advantage to the Jaguars because, you know, the Jaguars play every year in London. That's one of their things. They're kind of London's team. And they're staying out there for 2 weeks, just like they did last year, just like they did the year before. So you got 2 weeks in London. They've done it before. They're doing it again. They know the routine. They know the schedule. This is nothing new for them. So I think they have a bit of an advantage as far as familiarity with London. They know where they're staying. They've played in those practice fields before. They've been in those training rooms before. They've been in that stadium several times before. And I remember my first year in London, okay, I was a little bit, you know, wide at second year, you know, okay, I've done this before. Third year, okay, like I've done this before. You're not going to be as worried about like, oh, let's go see this or go to dinner here. We're in London. You know, you're going to focus on the task at hand. So I think the Jaguars do have the benefit in that situation. But then again, you look at how the Jaguars finished. You guys forget this. They were the best team in the AFC at one point. And I'm not talking early in the year. We're talking midseason. They lost their last six of the last seven games.
Yeah.
Okay. They were the number one seed over the Ravens. People are talking about they have a chance to go to the Super Bowl this year. And they lost six of the last seven. The Bears, you look at they won four of their last six. And their defense came to life. Obviously, now it's a different offense, the way that defense was looking. So if you're just looking at trajectory here, you're talking one team's going like this, one team's going like – so you would assume if you can kind of keep that momentum going, and obviously the momentum ends with the season. I'm a true believer in that. People saying, oh, they finished the year this, so they're going to be this. Like, no, it's a new team. It's a new season. There's too much time off. You're not going to carry momentum in. But if – the Bears can keep that going. They have a lot of the same faces on that defense, a lot of the same faces on that coaching staff. I think you've improved the coaching staff. So just off a trajectory, you got to go with the Bears, the way they're looking this year and what they've done in free agency in the draft. So, you know, don't play this in Jacksonville, but going with the Bears.
Hey, but you know, the funny thing, Clay, is you made a great point. The Jags spending 2 weeks there. Well, we know when it comes to the Bears, they ain't gonna let you spend 2 weeks. There's a lot of hotel money. The Bears will fly in the day of the game.
Russell, we had used to do that in college, man. We'd literally fly in the day of the game. We'd play, then we'd get back on the plane, bro. That was like FTF life.
Don't turn the plane off. We're going to keep it warm. We're going to keep it warm.
The Bears were cheap like that, huh?
The Bears are gonna pay for 1 day of hotel, right? And then the rest, if you stay, it's going to be payroll deducted. Okay, don't get it wrong. You stay extras.
No, you're okay.
I guarantee the Bears would not be going out there for 2 weeks. I guarantee they'll go out maybe a couple days before. I'd say three max. That's pushing.
Shad Khan. Oh, yeah. Used to go on his mega yacht. I mean, that guy has got some stupid money. He'd bring you into his office, have a meeting with him. He'd be like, "Okay, what kind of car you got?" Every time I had an Audi RS5. I'm like, an Audi RS5. He's like, okay, Audi RS5. He's like, you probably paid me like $5,000 for that car. I'm like, dang, man, because he has so many parts. He's like, you know, an engineer. Yeah. He had so many parts that goes in every car. And he's like, crazy. You paid this for the car. You probably paid me $5,000. I'm like, man, this is crazy. He's just gonna flex crazy. Like that?
Right. What kind of flex is that whole time? Right. That was crazy. Yeah. That's a wild flex, dog. I appreciate it. I know I paid you, but I appreciate you paying me. You know what I mean? That's right. Hey, man, Clay, we appreciate you coming through as always, man. Love having you on. Love talking football with you. You going to be out of training camp this year?
I'm going to catch a few games for sure, but I'm going to be doing a little bit more in Philly. But yeah, I'll be there. I'll see you guys.
See you out there, right, man. Clay, can't wait to see you there. Appreciate you guys for watching. For Jason McKee, for Clay Harbor, it's your boy Pat the Designer back at it again. Y'all hit that like button, subscribe to the page, and let us know how you feel about the Jacksonville-London game. Y'all stay safe out there, Chicago. Bear down. Peace.